From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
Running through the professional and personal life of my guest today is a consistent theme, being an advocate for human rights. She is the director of the Howard University Constitutional Law Center and is professor and associate dean of the Howard University School of Law. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on the journey is Professor Lisa Crooms. Welcome.
Thank you, President Frederick.
So you are a Howard University undergrad graduate.
Proudly.
All right. Tell me what led you to Howard University.
What led me to Howard University was, I think it began my next door neighbor growing up. He came to Howard, I think, in the early 70s. And it just seemed from that point in my life onward, Howard was always a presence, primarily through people who were attending.
And where did you grow up?
At that point, I was living in a small place called Metuchen, New Jersey.
Okay. What was your neighborhood like growing up? How many siblings you had?
I'm an only child, although I have an extensive array of first cousins. My father's one of 13, and we all lived within about 30 minutes of each other.
After you left Howard University undergrad, what was your impression of your next steps in life in terms of what Howard University prepared you for?
I knew graduate school of some sort was in the plan. Originally, I thought I might get my PhD in econometrics, but chose to go to law school instead. When I graduated, my first paying job beyond wrapping gifts at the Heck Company was working for a small lobbying outfit on Capitol Hill called the Washington Office on Africa. And I joined the staff full time just as we were pushing for the first sanctions bill against South Africa, initially introduced by Ron Dellums and eventually passed with enough votes to override President Reagan's veto. So I came out of my experience at Howard and landed in what most would consider to be a dream activist job, doing lobbying around Southern Africa.
All right, and you attended University of Michigan Law School in the late 80s,
yes,
into early 90s. What was your experience like, especially when you compare it to your Howard undergrad experience?
Well, you know, there are two things I can share with you. One is that in my law school class, because I worked for 4 years in between finishing up my undergraduate degree here and starting law school at Michigan, there was another Bison. She, in fact, was a member of the class of 1988. So she had come through with no breaks. And our feeling was that our colleagues who had attended predominantly white institutions came to law school or came to the law school experience at Michigan easily intimidated. And they often remarked that the two of us from Howard and there was another of our classmates who went to Spelman, all of the rest of our classmates felt that we had gotten something at the undergraduate level that prepared us to believe that we belonged in that space, and there was absolutely no question about it.
Now, that's interesting, because here you are in law school with other African-American students who have attended predominantly white institutions, mm-hmm. So you would think culturally they have assimilated to the environment,
mm-hmm.
But yet still, They saw something in the three of you with your HBCU experience,
mm-hmm.
That was different. Well, how do you explain that or put it into context of today's contemporary experience for the current HBCU student and more pertinently the current Howard student?
Well, I think that what was the case then is still the case. When I started law school, race-based affirmative action was still a hot-button issue. And Michigan, as we saw, let's say, 20 years later, became one of the epicenters of that struggle around how you use race with respect to admissions. But even before you get to that question, whether you should use race in admissions. So the fall that I started law school, fall of 1988, was a particularly contentious fall at Michigan. Someone, I don't know how they got it, had gotten hold of the entering credentials of all of the students in the first year class and the student newspaper, the law school student newspaper, their first issue. My first year in law school, they published the average undergraduate GPA and LSAT scores broken down by race for the incoming class. Mm. And that was our welcome.
Wow, that's quite a welcome. You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Professor Lisa Crooms. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. I want to shift a little bit, but mm-hmm. still keep on the track of where we are. Currently at the Howard University School of Law, you have a fairly diverse population. Do you see some of the same differences in the students who may be coming from a predominantly white institution to Howard University?
Absolutely. I think that armed with more contemporary terminology, what we see in the building is almost it's almost a type of post-traumatic stress disorder. Many of our current students who have attended predominantly white institutions before coming to Howard, hence Howard is their first HBCU experience, it's almost a homecoming for them. They feel able to let a certain amount of their guard down that one's to assume they've had to keep up for quite some time. What we end up having to do for many of the students is to underscore that while we are part of this larger storied institution, that the HBCU experience at the graduate and professional level should be significantly different than the experience that you get at the undergraduate level. So if you're planning on coming for homecoming, you might want to wait until your third year, that being closer to graduation, rather than deciding that your first year in, you're going to try to sample as much of the Howard experience as possible.
Understood. Switch gears a bit. Tell me about constitutional law. You're the director of the Constitutional Law Center at the School of Law. Tell me what types of things are happening in the center and where that's heading.
Well, the center at this point has benefited extraordinarily from a partnership with our existing civil rights clinic. In that regard, we have provided assistance, whether it be a particular professor, myself, or someone else, to work with our supervising attorney in the clinic to not just identify which cases the clinic might want to intervene by way of filing an amicus brief, but also to work through some theories that might not necessarily be mainstream, to use the amicus brief process as a way not just to practice what we truly believe Charles Hamilton Houston attempted to do throughout his career, but also to introduce students to the idea that we teach you the law as it is so that you can work on theories and think about what the law should be. So we're engaged in what is absolutely a positive process. That is, we would consider ourselves to be an absolute failure if our students walk out the door not knowing what the law is. But for us, the bigger failure perhaps is if their imaginations haven't been ignited so that they can see what the law should be, and using the tools that we've provided them, be able to walk from where it is to where they'd like to see it be.
And I think extending that to a contemporary experience for your students, when you look at LGBT issues as well, do you see the Howard graduate expanding their tools, as it were, to fulfill the vision of a Charles Hamilton Houston, in that the civil rights laws are on the books in a way that, you know, I think gives the necessary protections.
Mm-hmm.
But should we be using other means to ensure a what I would call a fuller pursuit of the happiness? Corporate law, entertainment law, sports law, all areas where
mm-hmm.
all forms of life are affecting mm-hmm. African Americans and other underrepresented minorities.
Sure. If I can unpack your question, as it relates to the first part, I think while we proudly raise the name of Charles Hamilton Houston, I think that looking to a lawyer trained by Houston, that being Pauline Murray, provides the answer to the first part of your question. That is, while she was the only woman to graduate in her class, she graduated first in her class, and because Harvard at the time remained a single-sex institution, she could not continue the tradition of the person who graduates first in Howard's class used to move on to an LLM at Harvard. She wasn't afforded that opportunity and had to go to the University of California, Berkeley, to complete her SJD. It's a doctorate in law.
Harvard's law, UC Berkeley's game.
Absolutely. But the extraordinary thing about Pauline Murray, and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg gives her all the credit, is that but for Pauline Murray paying attention to what Houston was doing in the classroom around race, the 14th Amendment would never have been expanded to include sex discrimination. That the theory used to say that the 14th Amendment is broad enough to include equality on the basis of sex and gender was a theory based in that Houstonian jurisprudence. And at the time, Murray was viewed by some as being incredibly conservative because she stood toe-to-toe with people who were pursuing an equal rights amendment, because that faction of the mainstream women's movement believed that you couldn't get anywhere with the 14th Amendment, and what women's equality needed was a completely separate amendment. Murray said that she could not, in fact, live a life that required her to divide herself, hence she was unwilling to consider a divided strategy. And she stuck to her guns, and once the ERA was defeated, we saw, and we still see, the 14th Amendment being broadened so that equality on a number of different bases is in fact now viewed as being without question included within what the 14th Amendment protects.
I know of an excellent constitutional law professor who was recovering on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. If I had the opportunity to make the argument to him why teaching Howard University students would probably be the most fulfilling thing he could do, what would that argument be as we close?
The argument would be nowhere else would he be able to come and perhaps revisit some of the issues that he wrote about during law school, that he would be respected for the scholar that he is. And the presidential thing, it's a nice plus, but we appreciate him as a scholar first and foremost. We also think, making the pitch for the law school, that once you experience teaching law within the Howard context, and I've taught a few other places as an adjunct, that there's nothing like teaching Howard students, many of whom come to the university because they have this burning desire to figure out how to merge legal education with advocacy. So it would take him back to his community organizer roots. We like community organizers at Howard. There will be no derision for what it is that he's chosen to do outside of the academy.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Professor Lisa Crooms, and I think it is absolutely clear that the recovering constitutional law professor on Pennsylvania Avenue would make an excellent colleague for her. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.